Yes, I'm going to talk to you. I'm not just here to be pretty. Is the sound okay? We good? Okay. Thank you. Before I even start, I have to just speak about the amazing team of people sitting in front of you right now. The fact that I get to be up here, I am totally winning. I got away with so much. I feel blessed. I mentioned when we met earlier this week or last month or however long we've been here that, you know, I've been talking to young people and teachers for at least 16 years. I've been doing leadership workshops and trainings for over 20 years. And, you know, blah, 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 right? Blah, 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 breathe. And I like to think of myself as someone who meets people where they are, right? And I do my best to see people for their real selves. And I place a lot of importance on supporting other people to get real and to see the truth in each other. But I am still, every day, confronted with my assumptions. Can anybody relate? Okay, I am not alone. So I want to talk a little bit tonight about the craziness that gets between us, because pretty much we all do it, right? And we don't always talk about our assumptions or our biases or our prejudices, right? Because that's not cool. That's not who we're supposed to be on the planet. I want to accept everybody for who they really are, in their spirits, right? That's who we are. But if we're honest, we make assumptions about people every day. It's part of our coding. Vinny talked the other night about how we come from nervous animals, right? Animals whose job it was to figure out who's in and who's with us and who is an outsider and how to be safe and what's prey and what's food, right? Like, we have to make decisions quickly. So that's how we survived. The thing is, we're still doing it. We're still doing it to each other all the time. We put people in groups and figure out who people are based mostly on first impressions or our first experiences of them. I know I'm saying what you already know, but hang in here with me. Now, I don't blame anybody for what they believe. And I do not blame anybody for their assumptions about the people around us, but I do believe those assumptions are our responsibility. You know what I'm saying? We have to know what our assumptions are if we ever hope to develop a real conversation with each other, to really see and connect with the people around us. Like, think about it. How can I possibly work with you or serve you or teach you or trust you if I'm busy trying to see you through this haze of assumptions I have about you? But it doesn't just stop there, right? Because from those assumptions, we start making up stories about each other. It's like we start with an assumption about somebody based on how they look or what they said. And then we start building a story based on what we think we know about people like that. Y'all with me? It's getting quiet. We start building a story based on what we think we know about those people. And then we add context, right? We're at work. We're in the store. We're on a meditation retreat, right? And even from that, we start adding how we're feeling to create the stories we make about each other. For example, I see a young woman in the street with a baby. First assumption, mother, right? Easy. But then I start filling in the blanks because my mind is amazing. I don't know about your mind, but my mind will fill in every empty blank, right? So it starts to be, I start making up a story about how she got pregnant and how young she was when she got pregnant and the baby's father and why did he leave and she's now living in the street, or maybe she's not living in the street. Maybe she's living at home with her mother. Maybe she's on welfare. Is she doing drugs? And then you put an overlay of that with her skin is a lot darker than the baby's. How does that change the story? The baby's skin is darker than hers. How does that change the story? And before I know it, I have built an entire story around somebody that I will probably never see again. I like to listen to a lot of books on tape. And one of the books I like to go back to is Jack Kornfield's Buddhism for Beginners. And if you've heard this story, don't give it away. So he talks about, sorry, I just love the color of this microphone. Sorry. So he talks about how, like, he had one of those amazing, like, chunks of time that you don't expect, you know, like a free hour. And he decides he's going to go to the grocery store, get some food, you know, have a little picnic lunch. It's all going to be fabulous. And he goes to the grocery store with his, I don't know, lentils and cauliflower, whatever he eats. And he's standing in line behind this woman who's holding a baby. So there's this cart and the baby. And he's doing whatever, he's probably meditating, or I don't know what he does. And, you know, the lady with the cart and the baby, they move forward and they, you know, she starts putting the stuff on the cart. And he talks about this moment when it seems like everything kind of slows down. Do you know that feeling when you're in the store and you're like, shouldn't I be out of here by now? What's going on up there, right? And he tunes in and he realizes that the cashier is talking about the baby, you know, how the baby is so cute in that outfit and looks so healthy. And, you know, the woman with the baby is, you know, going on and on like we do about babies, like he walked today and how, what he did and how he slept and what a good mood he's been in. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in that situation, but when I imagine myself in Mr. Kornfield's place, I imagine myself being like, I've got an hour to get where I'm going, right? And so, you know, at one point it gets so crazy, the lady actually hands the baby to the cashier to get the money out of the purse, you know, and get that all figured out. Finally, the bill is paid, the baby's in the right arms, the cart is moving on. And he walks up to the cashier, and I'm guessing he was looking at her like, probably not. And the cashier looks at him and says, I am so sorry. My mom takes care of my little boy when I have these long shifts at the store. And on days like this, I leave before he wakes up, and I don't get home till long after he's asleep. And so she makes a point every day of finding a way to bring him down here, whether it's by bus or by taxi, so that I can see him for a little bit each day. I'm terribly sorry for the inconvenience. I mean, this is a classic example of what happens, you know? And in his situation, he had an opportunity to know what the true story was, right? His own story flattened out, and he learned the truth. But we don't always get that chance, right? Like, for example, I might be standing or walking down Castro or down Broadway in New York, and I see some fabulous young man in white pants and a pink shirt with an amazing fluidity and grace to his arms and neck. You know what I'm saying? I am sure that I will look at that person and go, gay. That's just what I'm gonna do. Now, of course I don't stop there, right? I have to put the context on it, and I have to make up the whole story. I have to fill in all the blanks. And I fill in the blanks based on what I feel about my assumption. So if I feel okay about gay people, maybe I'm in there going, wow, that looks like a great time. They're really going for it. I'm gay too. We're going to be safe. Let's party. But if I have a different kind of feeling about that assumption, I might get disgusted or angry or frustrated. And the truth is, whichever side of the coin I land on, it impacts my story about that person. And yeah, maybe I could cross the street and find out what's true, but I don't do that. I'm halfway around the corner. I got to get to Bart, right? I make an assumption about him and an assumption about him, his friends. I make up the story and it works for me, so I don't really need to hear the true story, right? And I'm not stupid. If everybody's doing it, that means you're doing it to me, right? Just nod your head. You know you're doing it to me, right? So now, not only am I weaving a tale about you, I'm busy trying to figure out what your story is about me. Oh my gosh. Who you think I am? What assumptions are you making me about me right now? What's the story inside of the story? Am I, you know, like the whole thing? Like, I was in my hometown a few years ago, and I had rented a car, and they were out of SUVs, so I got an Escalade. And I'm driving this car, and I notice a police car driving past me once and twice. And the second time, I look over, and I see him, and I see him looking at me. And we're making stories, aren't we? Right? And I'm trying to figure out, okay, is he safe? Am I safe? Is this one of those like protect and serve police officers or not? And what is he thinking of me? Is he making up a story about the color of my skin, the car that I'm driving? Is he making up a story about how much money I probably have or don't? Is this stolen or not? I'm double bumping all the time. So are you. Can anybody relate to what I'm talking about? Okay. But here's where it kicks me. This dance of stories ends up having an impact on what I think about myself and how I see myself in the world. So if I'm somebody, let me get honest, I am somebody who has a history of not feeling smart enough or good enough. I'm always wondering what people think about me, right? It becomes a minefield. And I honestly, I could do 2 or 3 more talks about how that minefield has changed the ways that I step into leadership, my willingness to take risks, my willingness to meet or accept new people, my willingness to create healthy relationships, my ability to think I'm not good enough. Thoughts, thoughts, thoughts. The Buddha said, with thoughts we create the world, right? So I'm creating this craziness. And I'll be honest with you, I had to do some work. That's why I'm talking about this. I'm not trying to teach you anything. I'm trying to tell you what I had to figure out. So hang with me. And I started investigating how often I have allowed someone else's stories about me and my assumptions about their stories to influence how I move and what I feel like I can do. I had to start looking at how I moved from being a little girl who thought she could do anything. Y'all, I used to be able to fly, right? And I became someone who started to believe those tiny voices whispering in my head. I don't know if you know these voices. They sound like, I'm not good enough. I'm going to get found out. I'm an imposter. It's going to go wrong. You with me? And eventually I noticed. Eventually I realized that more and more often, when I hear that voice talking about I'm scared, I can't do it, I'm not the one, I can smile a little bit because I know where that story comes from. I've done some investigation and know what in my past impacted that. And I also know that more than once I have proven those voices wrong. I have shown up. I have done my job. I am good at what I do. I've even gone so far to intentionally find people that I can look to and say, am I okay? Am I going to get this? Is this all right? Can you trust me? Some of them are in this room right now. And I've gotten to a place where I feel like, yeah, I'm scared, and sometimes I'm fighting doing it, but more and more often I say yes. But things change. About 6 years ago, my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Now, generally, when that happens, we pull the family together, right? And we figure out which sister's gonna do what, and we reach the extended family if we need the support, whether it's financial or emotional. But I don't really have that. I'm an only child. And I don't really have an extended family to speak of. But I did what we do. That's my mama, right? So I moved past my fear of not being able to do it right. And I moved past not feeling like I could love enough. And I let go of what I thought made me who I am in terms of my job or living in California or who my friends were. And I created a home where I could catch her. I don't have to tell you it's been hard. And I don't have to tell you it's been scary. But we were okay, you know? But then one day, my mom lay down and she didn't want to get back up. Now, I had gotten used to her taking like kind of long breaks and, you know, my mom has a whole nother world going on in her head. She's got a party going on I am not invited to. So, you know, 84 years old, you want to sleep all day? Do you, boo, right? Like, rest. But after a day had gone by and the food I had taken her hadn't been eaten and I hadn't seen her get out of the bed, I got scared. And I started moving in a little harder, you know, and I waking her up and trying to raise her up. But every time I tried to move her, she was in pain and she would scream. And I don't know if you've ever heard your mama cry, but I remember, like, up until that point, my mom had always been very, very mobile. I'd never had to lift or carry her in that way, but I'm trying to get her to the bathroom. I'm trying to get her on the bedpan. I'm trying to, like, get water into it. Nothing was working. 2 days by myself. I got nobody. So I called the doctor. And I explained what had been going on. And I talked to the primary care nurse. And I said, you know, I'm not good. I'm not strong enough. I can't do it. And those voices that had been quiet that I could handle, they were right here. See, I knew it. I can't do it. So here I am, I'm beating myself up. I'm already in the tyranny of, you know, beating myself up. And this nurse, this person who's supposed to be my connection, she says to me, "Miss Dunn, what is going on over there? This is the, has she been drinking water? Because, you know, she's probably dehydrated. This is the second time we've had to deal with this. What's going on?" I mean, we, you know, we can get an IV over there and maybe get her hydrated and she'll probably be okay. But I got to tell you, we're a little worried. And I'm going to send a nurse over there, but I'm also going to send a social worker so we can find out what's going on with your mom's care. You know, we need to make sure you get the training you need. This woman was on the phone telling me that I didn't know what I was doing. And she low-key threatened to call Elder Protection Services on me. You have to understand, I had done so much work to get rid of those voices. And not just anybody could have brought them back, right? Not really. It took this professional woman that I thought knew more than me and was smarter than me. I had all kinds of stories about her, but she had stories about me too. And I was so scared. And I was so angry. On the one hand, I've got like, I'm sorry. I don't know what to do. I've tried everything and I'm failing. Please send anything. Help me. I'm sorry. If you guys could just take a deep breath for me, that would help. And there was the other side of me. Who the hell do you think you are? How dare you talk to me like that? So, you know, for two more days, I've got nurses coming into my house and trying to get an IV in my mom's teeny tiny little veins and trying to make her move as if physical therapy even made sense. And finally, somebody that seemed smarter than me looked at me and she took my hand and she said, Pam, you're right. If this was my mom, she'd be in the hospital. I call the doctor again. And I explain everything that's happened. We're not getting anywhere. It's now been 4 days. We got to do something. And in her wisdom, she said, well, the doctor will be in tomorrow morning. I'll talk to him when he gets in and we'll see what we need to do. I hung up the phone and dialed 911. My mom spent a week in the hospital and they're still not sure what happened. The one thing they made sure to do was reassure me it wasn't my fault. Now, of course, hindsight is always 20/20. I feel like I should talk slower. So, I'll just throw you back in a sit if we don't use it all up. Or maybe somebody will sing a little song. Now, I am queen of what I should have said. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Right? Like, I can rewrite a script all day. So you have to know, what I wanted to do was roll up to that hospital, put my finger in the air, let my neck pop, and make it very clear to her, you should never talk to anybody like that. If you ever have a child who's trying to make sure that their mother is okay, you have to have more compassion than you showed me. How dare you suggest that I am abusing my mother? How dare you? But the more I'm in this practice, the more I know that my goal is equanimity. I'm looking for that balance, that middle, you know? And I think in a wiser moment I might have said, my mother is sick and I am scared. If there's something you can do to help her, I want to talk about that. If after she is better and she's all right, you want to have a conversation with me about the care and feeding of my mother, I'm open to do that with whomever you think I should do that. But right now, all I care about is my mother being well. And when I write the script for her, she would have said something more like, how are you? What do you need? What can I do? Then he shared a story with me I'm going to share with you. Back in the day, a serious practitioner had traveled a really long way to sit at the feet of his teacher. So you have to imagine what that must have taken back then, right? There's no Amtrak, right? There's no Delta. So there's like the being on horseback, the walking for miles, the climbing steep mountains, dealing with weather. And it took a couple of weeks, but he finally arrives and he's very excited to connect in with the source, you know? So when his teacher showed up, he immediately began asking questions. I wanted to ask you, but she interrupts him and says, hold up. The last time we talked, your mother was moving in with you. How is she? And he's a bit thrown off by the question, but finally says, she's doing well, thank you. Okay, that moment passed, so he begins again. Look, I wanted to ask, and she says, well, wait, your son was going away to university as well. Do y'all still stay in touch? Again, a bit perplexed. Like, yeah, I mean, not as much as I like, but we're doing pretty good. He composes himself once again, and just as he begins to ask his question, she asks, you also have a lot of animals on your land. It's been a particularly cold winter. Is there a heating source in the barn? I imagine he's like, the animals are cool. But the problem I'm having is not with my animals. I've come a long way to check in with you about my practice. And you keep interrupting me, asking me all of these trivial questions. And I really want to check in on my progress. I want to talk about my practice. And she sat back and took a breath. And she reached out and touched his knee and said, I haven't asked you about anything else. Sometimes we get focused on what we're doing, our practice, our jobs, our progress, and forget that we're not here alone. We're not doing this sitting just for ourselves alone. I know I'm not the only person in this room that has stories about the people I've been on retreat with for a week. Y'all can smell where I'm going, can't you? I am willing to bet most of us have created an idea of what those we see each day think about us. And maybe we wish we could manage their idea of us in some way. If the idea of Sangha is to allow other people in, it is important to be willing to set aside the made-up stories and allow room for the truth to show up. So, my challenge is, for the rest of our time, maybe notice. Notice what your stories are about the people you're sitting with. Notice what you've made up about them and what's it based on. Someone said the greatest kindness we can do for anyone is to liberate them from our stories about them. And notice what kind of stories you've imagined they've made up about you. I've sat with a few people in here. I know we think people think something about us, right? Like, I think you think about you, I think you think. Right? Now, let me be really clear. Please, as we move out of silence, please don't rush up to people talking about, I'm so sorry about the assumption I made about you. You know what I thought about you when I met you? Don't do that. Because I'll tell you one more time, what you think about me isn't any of my business. It's really not. The three refuges speak to, can I trust my own knowing? Am I engaged with the truth, with reality? Or am I making something up? And can I let other people in? Because I'm not doing this by myself. Challenge you in the next couple of days to get to know each other in a way that maybe the story you've made up can be replaced by the truth. I can go through it again, but that is my time. And now, Law is going to sing for us. No, for real, what do we do now? Excuse me. Story time. How about this? Let's split the difference. Let's sit for about 15 and then shake it loose for about 15. Fair? All right. You don't have to get in any magical pose. Just land back in yourself. And if anything came up for you as I was talking, if there's any part of you that's like, oh no, that was me. I'm doing it right now about her. Have compassion. We're all doing the best we can. If we knew better, we'd do better. In a few minutes. Thank you for accompanying me on the roller coaster. You're welcome for the extra few minutes. Don't forget that we're going to do some walking after this. And is there? Of course there is. Chanting at 9. Be well.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.